to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magic Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome back to the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is show number 95. I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary. And did you know the Disney Nerds Podcast is brought to you by TouringPlans.com? Spend more time riding and less time in line at Walt Disney World, and make sure you use your 20% discount code 15NERDS. That's 15NERDS. The Disney Nerds Podcast is also brought to you by MyFantasyBands.com. Decorative decals for your theme park wristbands. With a 20% discount code, DisneyNerds20, MyFantasyBands.com. Interested in a t-shirt? Get your official Disney Nerds Podcast t-shirt available at our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheDisneyNerds. All proceeds benefiting the Make-A-Wish Foundation through New City t-shirts. We also have an official travel agent. And with me here on the show today is Jimmy from Once Upon a Time Travel. Jimmy, how are you?
I am wonderful. So happy to be here.
As always. And joining Jimmy and myself, Jennifer from Delightful Life. Jen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Outstanding.
I do have to say, Sam, that you were reading off all of those awesome sponsors and things like that. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there's going to be some representation from a lot of those great products and people and brands at our upcoming meet in the fall, yeah?
That is true. And I think, Jimmy, you have all the details on that, right?
This is like the biggest thing going on in probably my life right now. I just hit my fast pass day yesterday, the day before.
Oh.
So that's a big deal, right? So
awesome.
My trip, once you hit fast pass day, you know, the countdown is on. You're getting close. In case you haven't heard, we are having a meet down in Walt Disney World at Epcot, October 2nd at 5 o'clock.
2015, if you're listening to this in the future.
That's correct. And if you have time travel, you could go back to that moment in time and meet with us.
But make sure you let us know you came from the future.
Please. And so we will start at our meet at the Odyssey Building. If you're not familiar with the Odyssey Building, it is the building that's kind of over the water, right in between Test Track and Mexico, and that's where the craft beer booth is. So we're going to meet there at 5 o'clock, start there, and then we're going to start through Mexico, work our way around with the goal of being at the American Adventure Pavilion for 8 o'clock for the last showing of Starship.
Woo-hoo. That'll be fun.
And we'll just, yep. And so we're calling it the 2015 Disney Nerds Podcast Half Sample-thon.
We'll sample our way halfway around.
That's
okay,
right.
Now, which way are we going? Did we decide this?
Yeah, we're going through Mexico.
Okay.
It only makes sense if you're coming from the Odyssey.
Well, unless you want a couple of extra stops and want to, anyway, that's fine.
Now, and let me tell you this. So the 8 o'clock, we'll be watching Starship. They only play for about 20 minutes, and then the park doesn't close till 10. So after Starship, anybody that's still feeling froggy, we can still continue from there and maybe make it a three-quarter marathon.
There you go.
I don't know if we can make a full marathon. Jennifer, could you make a full marathon, a full sample-thon?
I could eat my way the rest of the way around the world, probably.
Okay,
that's fair enough.
I've heard some live coverage of the whole drink around the world. Have you ever heard like a show do that? That is dangerous.
Yeah, it's very dangerous.
It's
no way
out with the best intentions.
But there is no way with Sam and his recording equipment that I am trying a full sample thon.
Reminds me, I have some videos that I need to make.
Yes,
but that's
I've
a whole nother story.
Yeah, no. So with that being said, I also want to encourage people, if you're not drinkers, believe me, that's why we didn't call it a drink-a-thon. It is a sample-thon. If you're not a drinker, that's fine. If you want to taste foods and sample foods instead of drinks along the way, that's fine. There will be kids there, I promise you. It will be kid-friendly. So don't feel like you can't come if you're not a drinker. Fair warning, some people will be drinking.
I will get my Duffy, and I'll stop at the kids' cot stops. I have no problem with that.
I know you will. I know you will. And with that being said, earlier, Sam had mentioned the Disney Nerds Podcast t-shirts. We're excited about those. We have those in different colors now. And as Sam said, all the proceeds from that, all the Disney Nerds Podcast proceeds from that will be donated to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I will say, at the meet, if you show up in the Disney Nerds Podcast t-shirt, one of us will have something for you, just a little. There'll be all kind of different giveaways and prizes. We'll do some trivia stuff or just different things to give away some prizes and have some small giveaways. But if you show up in a shirt, there may be a little bit something extra for you.
I got a pink one. I love it.
Yeah, I have the original red one before we offered the different colors. I have a couple of those. But I think I'm going to contact Mark over at New City Shirts and not get a pink one. But I may get a pink one for Kim. But you know what? I would wear pink, though. It wouldn't bother me. But I may order some different colors. So if you're coming out and you want to get a shirt, that'd be great. And there'll be a little something in it for you.
Very cool.
So you're
other than just showing your Disney Nerds Podcast side.
That's right. You are at the Fast Pass window, which means we're going to have lots of information on the meet coming up in future shows. That's for sure.
You should be at the Fast Pass window by, what, Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah.
Jen, you too?
Well, I have to talk to Sam at some point. We won't take up this show, but we need to talk about how the Swan and Dolphin do Fast Passes differently, because I actually have a chance to stay at the Swan or Dolphin this time. So
let's address that, because there's been a lot of questions regarding the Swan and Dolphin that come up on the group and Facebook. So yeah. Understand that the Swan and Dolphin Hotel are Starwood properties. Now, Starwood is your Westin, Sheraton, it's that hotel group. So you can book them through Walt Disney World through a regular travel package. Now, in fact, these are the only two resorts that are not Disney-owned and operated, and there's a whole history there that's a whole other show.
Absolutely true.
You can book them through Disney as a package, or you can book them through Starwood.
SPG. And let me just add something to that, Sam, and I don't want to interrupt you, but with that being said, as a travel agent, I just booked a buddy of mine at the Dolphin for the weekend I get there, which is about 60 days out. And you can definitely book it through a Disney travel agent, just like you book your regular Disney resort. However, I will say that you still cannot purchase a dining plan. Does not qualify for a dining plan. So you can book the whole package together, just like a regular Disney package, but just the one stipulation is there's no dining plan.
And I guess in this case, as Jen's going through, which is what I am typically doing, I'm looking for room only.
Yeah.
So you can book this through SPG.com if you're a preferred member of that program.
Okay.
I think most people know that I travel regularly from my job, so I try to stay at Sheraton's and Westin's, and you can use points to stay at this resort,
right.
Which is very good to look into. I would also suggest SwanandDolphin.com to book it. You'll find lots of special offers. And here's what I mean by special offers. They tend to offer packages for not only Florida residents, but for teachers, for military. There's lots of interesting things out
there. It's like a first responders. Yeah, there's some really cool.
And it changes all the time. There's some really good things. Now, to your question, Jen, when you book through the Swan and Dolphin outside of Disney, you make your hotel confirmation. That confirmation number one, make sure that it has the correct number of people in the reservation. That's from experience, because I screwed that up in the past. So you have a reservation number from Starwood. Then you go into My Disney Experience, link the reservation, and you can put that reservation number in. And when you do it, it will ask you to link it to people that will be in that room. And once you do that, it's just like a regular hotel reservation, and you can do it just like you're staying at a Disney resort. So
what were all those, and maybe they're gone now. Every time we've traveled in the past, they have special kiosks where you have, if you're a Swan or Dolphin guest, you had to book your FastPass Plus tickets there instead of the regular FastPass Plus.
Let me clear this up a little bit, because I just went through it with my friend.
Because that's where, I know that you get most of the on-site perks, but I don't know about that.
So this is what happens if you're staying at Swan or Dolphin. You can link the resort reservation to your My Disney Experience. The issue with that is there's no entitlements connected to it, so there's no theme park tickets because you have an annual pass. Your annual pass only allows you to book reservations 30 days out.
Right.
You would call your travel agent, or if you're not booking through an agent, you would call Disney directly, and basically they manipulate. They have a key card or something, and they manipulate the system and give you access to the 60-day FastPass.
Ah, good to know.
This has evolved unbelievably over the last 18 months.
And that's probably why I remember.
And I would say it changes constantly, because I have been staying at the Swan and Dolphin a lot. And for a while, it just was not part of the plan. In fact, there is no RFID at the Swan and Dolphin. You get their key for your room. So they're assuming that you have your ticket from someplace else and a paper ticket. You're not going to get a Magic Band if you just book straight with SwanOnDolphin.com.
Correct.
Interesting. Yeah, I bet it just has changed a lot.
Even though I booked his trip through Disney's website, through Disney's travel agent site, and I booked him a package at the Dolphin with 4-day park hopper tickets, even when you link it, it still doesn't pick up the tickets. You still have to call, because even though it's considered a package and you pay for it like a package, it's still separate, because technically you don't get your tickets until you check in and then they link them. So you basically call because there's no way to do a package.
You won't have that. Like if you bought tickets from Undercover Tourist or you had an annual pass, you could plug in your number.
You link that ticket.
And you'd be fine. Yeah. But you don't have
that. That still only allows you to get 30 days. You have to be staying on site to get 60-day fast passes.
Right.
But what happened with him is we linked it, and you go on there to do the fast pass, and it says, well, you don't have any theme park admission.
Right, exactly.
You have to call, and they manipulate the system.
And I'm sure those kinks will all be worked out, too.
Eventually, but, I'm sure it'll all be a little easier. And to be honest with you, as his travel agent, I spent a little time on the phone with them, probably about an hour and a half, trying to get that fixed for him. And between the people and reservations and the people in the internet help desk, there seemed to be a little confusion, to be honest with you, between those two. When the people on the My Disney Experience help desk look at it, they look at it completely like it's a completely different system than the people in reservations. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does. There's a whole show on Swan and Dolphin, which we'll get to at another point.
But for my planning, those little kiosks are gone, and I just have to call. So
that is correct. As of today,
good to know.
The beginning of August 2015, those little kiosks that used to be when you walked in are no longer
there. And then we can book FastPass Plus for our trip. That's exciting.
Which is completely opposite of my recent trip to Disneyland.
Yes, and with Jen, legacy FastPasses.
Are we getting back on topic?
I don't know that we ever had a topic, but
we haven't started it yet.
We're already how long in, which is going to impact the amount of park audio I can use at the end of the show. But anyway, Disneyland's 60th. Recently we had a show.
There.
I was there on the 60th, which was
so cool.
Wow. Now I was not there, doing research or doing things for the show. I was there with my family. We were doing a Southern California trip and tied it in to be at Disneyland on the day of the anniversary, the 60th anniversary. So I was definitely in the park riding some opening day attractions, and it was just very, very nostalgic and cool to be there, to say the least. But talking fast passes, like you mentioned, Jen, it's all old school paper fast passes. There's no magic bands. And it lets you remember very quickly. My old habits came back for how you leverage the paper system. Yeah. And at the same time,
running all over the place.
Basically, yes. Or I was. You had your runner, somebody running. And you remember doing that, and then you realize how cool the new system is, and you start to compare pros and cons of each. I am absolutely spoiled with wearing my Magic Band and being able to make a purchase or do anything.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's the one reason I miss it. I think I complained about that on the show too, and Ed kind of called me out. But yeah, it was awful to have to get out all those cards to pay for things.
Yeah, I'm reaching into my wallet. I'm looking for my key. I'm looking for a credit card and a license because they want it for each time versus tapping. And yeah, that I definitely like Magic Bands. Even your room keys on your wrist. I'm not digging for a room key or something
that
else.
That is nice.
There's no paper ticket to worry about, right? Because you scan the tickets and everybody scans them, and then you give them to one person who runs to a FastPass distribution machine and grabs the FastPasses.
But did you find, as I did, you were able to be a lot more efficient with your touring by using those old habits that you had, you know, had already figured out with legacy FastPasses previously?
And it came back so quick.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
came back so quick because it's a little different than Florida was. If I remember right, a paper FastPass in Florida, when it was distributed, your next FastPass was good when that one started. You could get another.
Yep.
Or two hours. Was it 2 hours or 3 hours?
I thought two. Either way, a little bit later, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been three, but it could have been two. Disneyland, it's 2 hours. So there was a lot of thinking going into, okay, let's grab this FastPass, even though it's good in 30 minutes, because in 30 minutes we can get another one.
Yep.
There was a lot of that kind of thought going into it, which was old school remembering how this stuff worked.
But by doing that, like I said, we rode probably 9 rides with FastPass versus 3, maybe 4 with FastPass Plus. So there's definitely, there were some pros and cons. So.
Yep. You can't do that booking for later in the day. You have to be in the park. You have to get it. But... you know, the habits did come back, and I have to say that there's pros and cons to each, because on the flip side, I like being able to schedule a FastPass Plus reservation and be able to know when I'm going to ride what, and I have dinner and I have this, because we did have some overlap, a FastPass and a dinner reservation at the same time. So being in the park, before we get to the 60th, a couple other little things, was the parades. I thought were absolutely outstanding, all of them. And I'm talking about the afternoon parades, both the Pixar Play Parade, and Soundstational. I thought
which you had not seen the Play Parade, correct?
I had not seen the Play Parade.
It is so good. So, Jimmy, the one that was at Hollywood Studios, it's like that, but it's like as if Disney actually did that. Like they put in flames and dancers and stilt walkers and giant floats and great music and tons of special effects and some of the like puppet vehicles from the Jammin' Jungle Parade. It is an amazing parade with that same sort of 5-4-3-2 fun Pixar
type
concept.
Theme. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool.
They had an Inside Out pre-parade for that when I was there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was there when you were, but it was pretty cool. I expected to see the characters walking, but it was really a float with all five emotions that were almost animatronics that were having a conversation and interacting with each other, and I thought that was pretty cool.
That's very cool.
You know, DCA in general. So last time I was at DCA probably 3 or 4 years ago, before Cars Land opened, before Carthay Circle, before Buena Vista Street. And I have to say, based on being there then and now, they absolutely fixed California.
I told you would love it. It's an amazing park. And it gives me such great hope for the studios. Like, not that they're going to, I mean, we don't really know for another month or so whether they're going to mirror some of the same choices or what. But the way that they doubled and transformed that park into something super cool. And the theming is amazing. Like, I can't wait to see what they have in store for the studios.
It is amazing. And looking at it and peeling back the onion a little bit, right, there's different lands within California Adventure. And originally it was all based on areas in the state of California. But that's kind of changed a little bit. But looking at it, one of the areas is Hollywood Land. And within Hollywood Land, they have an animation building.
And yes, so now you can see why I'm cautiously optimistic that they're going to turn it into something like that in Florida. Because that is not a downgrade. That is definitely
an upgrade. It is not a downgrade. There's an animation building, and they have the Drawing Academy, and actually that's where Turtle Talk with Crush is inside that building. But it's done extremely well. The meet and greets are outstanding, and I look at that and go, okay, if they're going to turn the animation building into this, that's cool.
Right.
I'm good with it.
And I don't know if your kids, you might have done this. Did you do that Anna and Elsa and Olaf meet and greets?
We did not.
Because they are set up similar to, now on the cruise, you actually have to go your first day and get like a 15-minute window. But their fast passes are similar. I mean, I guess it's sort of the same as any other fast pass, but it negates the need for 5-hour lines or 2 hours or whatever they are now. They have like a 15-minute return window. Anna and Elsa are together and then Olaf is somewhere else. But it's very much like a short window that you get at the beginning of the day. And you go back at that assigned time, which is really nice. And it's just at that point, there's a couple of families in line and nobody else, which is really cool.
That is cool. Very much so.
I don't think that the Anna and Elsa lines now. I think it's easier now and probably...
Because they're in FastPass Plus, I think.
But even in Walt Disney World, I think it's easier now to get a FastPass for Anna and Elsa or even go wait in line than it was...
You
know, 8 months ago.
Or even, a year.
A year ago. I mean, sure, I think the fever's died down. Don't get me wrong, the fever's still going, but it's not as bad. It's not to the point where it was.
Now, I imagine if Olaf makes his way to Florida for anything permanent, then it will
be
pretty busy again.
Yeah, I would expect so. And I think that has to be in the works.
He's such a good character.
The other thing I noticed about DCA in general was the parade route itself. And talking about the parade kind of reminded me of this. It is very wide and it is very long.
It's the whole park.
It stretches all the way across the park. And essentially that gives you so many viewing locations that I want to say for the single... afternoon parade, Pixar Play Parade, there was only two or three people deep. I thought it was absolutely laid out perfectly.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And it would be the equivalent of running something in Hollywood Studios from all the way back by Lights Motors Action, up New York Street, all the way across and down Sunset Boulevard to Tower Terror. That's sort of the length of the parade.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Now, I will say we got caught two different times. Like, we saw it in one area, like in Hollywoodland, and then tried to get to the other side of the park, and it is kind of annoying that you pretty much can't. So there is a drawback to that. But at the same time, if it was your home park, you might know kind of the way around that.
Sure.
So.
And I'm sure most people there do.
Yeah.
Cars Land is absolutely everything they say it is. Mm-hmm. You can't. There's nothing else I can say there. And I always wonder, the thing that I always look at when it comes to Disney and new attractions, they always roll out the red carpet for the press and the media and show everybody how cool something is, and you get the line of bloggers that can't wait to write about it and say how great it is. I want to see it a year and a half later, 2 years later, to see if it still holds up to what everybody said. And Cars Land, I absolutely think that it does. Even though Luigi's Flying Tires is not there, it's gone.
And it was so good. And I'm sorry if someone's listening that disagrees. If you couldn't figure it out, that was your own fault.
Yeah, I wish
it was
I had
not
that.
Difficult to drive.
Yeah, I wish I had.
What's the okay? So, all right, expound on that a little bit, Jen, because I don't.
They were there were these flying saucer rides back like when Disneyland opened, and I think they were similar, but basically you become
air from underneath. And
yes,
you kind
so
of
you become like an air hockey puck,
right,
and basically you lean to drive your tire, your flying tire, and my like 4-year-olds could do it and had a blast. Like, we loved that ride, and the line was oppressively long, but what I've heard is that people said it was just too difficult to work, so they had to close it down because they were so disappointed by the time they got through the line to combine that long wait with a ride that nobody could work. They closed it down, and I don't understand that at all, but oh well.
Okay.
I've also heard that Imagineering ahead of time said this was a problem with the flying saucers. It's going to happen again. People don't like this ride. and
what if, I mean, there was a line for it.
Yeah. So apparently they were right, though, that it didn't have staying power for whatever reason. And
if anybody disagrees with Jen, it's Jen at the .com. So should be happy to respond to your emails.
Sure.
It's closed. You can tell where it is. It's all walls around it. No indication. Yeah.
What are they gonna do? Any rumor? No rumor of
nothing that I'm.
What's coming up next?
No. Nothing.
There's a postcard on the wall from the Luigi saying they're working on something. Like, not specifically on the ride, but that his cousins are all up to something. And
so I don't know. Something that will tie into Cars Land, which is good.
Something
it's
someday,
right?
Right? Yeah.
The Cars Land's good. Ate It, Flo's V8 Cafe, all that good stuff.
And the characters that go through Cars Land are so cool. So, yes. Like, you have Lightning McQueen and Mater and Red, and those are all pretty, I mean, they're still very cool. Especially if you're seeing them for the first or second time. Now, they're very similar to the ones in Florida where, you know, they drive a little, they stay put. They actually, you know, make car sounds and honk and what have you. But they also have DJ. I don't know if you saw him coming through. Like, it's the guy who puts Mac to sleep on the highway. They do, like, a dance party where he comes through. There's several other just cool kind of interactive things. And one of my favorite memories, so when my kids went for the first time, Nolan was like one and the girls were four, and they were terrified of Red because he was too loud. So they were trying to get a picture, but they were all crying. So the cast member said, "Hey, Red, hold your breath." And his motor shut off. He held his breath for my kids so that he got really quiet, and they were able to take the picture before breathed again. Yeah, so cool. So they have obviously some, you know, some cool tech to make sure that these cars really can be interactive. And either Red or Lightning McQueen, when we were eating at Flo's, like, honked happy birthday to somebody, which was super cool.
That is cool.
So it's so fun. It's such a fun land.
Very immersive. And if this is, again, I think this is an indication of what studios could end up being. So it's going to take some time, but it's going to be awesome.
You know what's interesting to me is, and somebody who's never been to Disneyland, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the Cars movies. But I get how it carries over.
And I agree with you, Jimmy. I'm not a huge fan of the movie. I saw it. I enjoyed it. But being in Cars Land, it was cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I get it. I get it how it translates to theme park. So it makes sense, even though I'm not a huge fan of the movie. I mean, I don't dislike the movie, but...
And we love... It's one of Kyle's favorites, and Nolan loves it. We actually love both of the movies. We even like the Planes movies, which is saying something, but...
You had to like it even more than I did, and I thought it was cool.
It's just so cool. Exactly right, Jimmy. Or like, it's, you don't have to love the movies to realize that as much as this happens anywhere else, it's a unique way to be transported somewhere completely different than, you know, home. So it's very cool.
Yeah. I did get some video of Mickey's Fun Wheel and the swinging cars that I'll edit together to show you, Jimmy, exactly what that's about. That is.
I'd love to see the video on that. Because the last show we had on when we talked about Jen's trip to Disneyland, I had no idea.
It's kind of cool.
I was thinking about that conversation again, actually. Because we're headed out to D23, I was like, I'll have to take Kyle on another romantic Ferris wheel ride where we hang on for dear life.
Can you periscope that?
I'll periscope it, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
That's funny. The Nighttime Spectacular World of Color is absolutely amazing. I've seen this before, but I've not seen it since they've redone it for... the 60th, so this is World of Color Celebrate. This happens on the Paradise Pier Lagoon. This is a series of water jets and video screens and technology that is absolutely amazing. And if they bring a fraction of this to Animal Kingdom's Rivers of Light, it will be absolutely amazing.
Yes.
Which is rumored to be opening... March?
Yeah, early next year, I think.
Yeah.
So which will be great. Now, the thing I found most interesting, I have seen World of Color in the past. And a lot like the castle show at Disney World, it's clips and different pieces of, you know, Disney stuff, and they would interchange things. So I saw it once. It had a Pirates of the Caribbean theme. Then I saw it again at Christmas time, and they threw in a winter theme. for this World of Color Celebrate, they completely redid it from scratch. And it's hosted by Neil Patrick Harris. And he tells the story of Walt Disney, a very abbreviated version, right, of Walt, the movies, Snow White, how that led to the park, and how ultimately Disneyland celebrating its 60th anniversary. It's awesome.
Yeah. I've actually heard a few people say they didn't like it as well. I don't know. I thought, I mean, it was the same technology, and it was certainly different than just the, you know, montage of great animated movies. But I loved the kind of historical story of
it.
And I think the use of Neil Patrick Harris was a good choice. I don't think it was too much. I think he did a great job. So I liked it a lot.
There were some clips in there, and I'm going to have audio of this at the end of this show. And I'll also have a video very soon over at Sam's Disney Diary, because I think it's just worth that. And there's a Star Wars clip in there that absolutely blew me away. I got chills watching this thing. Unbelievable.
Don't watch it, Dad.
Man. Especially if you're going to experience it at home. So.
Ed is standing strong on...
Well, so here's how they did it. And kind of interesting. They went through the movies. So it's Snow White, Jungle Book, and they had some clips of things. And they had a clip of Frozen. And it was interesting to see there were some moans and groans in the audience. I'm watching it going, yeah, this is okay. No big deal. Let's a little let it go in the middle of it. And then it switches to attractions in Disneyland. And there's a little bit of It's a Small World, some Haunted Mansion, which was really cool, the Tiki Room, lots of really cool stuff. And then the last one is Star Tours. And I thought, this is pretty cool. So they have a clip of Star Tours, and, you know, Now Departing, boom, boom, boom. And then, boom, it's a whole Star Wars, the Millennium Falcon comes shooting across. And I'm like, oh, it was incredible.
Very cool.
A small clip of the new stuff, but it was just cool to watch. And it wasn't a lot, but it was enough for me to go, okay. For as much as people, the Frozen is a target audience, so is the Star Wars, and I'm sure there were people going, oh, geez, here comes Star Wars again, but I'm going, oh, this is incredible, I love it.
Sure.
Well, and I will say something totally random. If you get, like, a front row spot, everything online and the cast members are like, you're going to get soaking wet. Like, I was terrified for my kids because we were freezing already while we were dry. I, like, wrapped my camera in a makeshift poncho because I wanted to get pictures. We got like a freaking drizzle like you get at Fantasmic. Now, we were standing right next to a jet, and honestly, the flame thing that shot up scared the crap out of us more than getting wet, but we did not get wet. So I've read these, I was like worried. So as they're
sitting, I wish you'd have periscoped that.
As we're sitting there for like an hour, yeah, I just screamed right into the thing, but right. We're sitting for an hour, I'm just reading all these horror stories where someone's like, I had a wetsuit on, not a wetsuit, like, what are those called? Like a rain?
A poncho?
No, but
the whole jacket and pants. I had my rain pants and rain jacket, and thank God
so
I did. Because everyone
else. South Louisiana, we would call that a slicker suit.
A slicker?
There you go, a slicker suit.
I don't know what that suit Larry wore.
So I don't think they said that, but this person was like, I had my slicker suit on, and thank God I did, because everyone else around me looked like they went swimming. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So do you think it has to do with the way the wind is blowing?
I don't know. I'm sure it does, but...
Yeah, the last time I saw Fantasmic, which has been a few years, the wind was coming in our face, and we were 10 rows back. There was nobody sitting in front of us. We could have easily just walked up and sat. But the wind was
really
blowing off edge. Yeah. It was blowing that mist just directly at us. So we had
to
back up.
But even still, if we were on one extreme, getting so wet you needed a rain suit is some other extreme that I can't picture. But either way, so don't panic if you're in
those
the
aren't
front
comfortable.
So you bring up an interesting point there, Jen, and that's the weather. Because it's absolutely beautiful all day, but it's cold every night.
Well, especially, and I just heard somebody talking about, I think they're talking about packing for a vacation, and they said, you know, they didn't do any research because they were going to Southern California, and if they would have just Googled, they would have learned of the May gray and June gloom that everyone knows about, which I didn't know about. Cold and gross in Southern California in June. I'm sorry, Southern Californians, I'd still rather live there than here, but it was so not, there was no sun ever. So we were really cold, and by the time it got nighttime, man, it was... So you're saying even in July?
So in early July, the first couple of days, there was a little bit of that gloom they talked about stuck around. But even after that disappeared and it was sunny and, 80-some degrees every day, it was still cool in the evening. You absolutely needed a jacket when the sun went down.
Good to know. So when we're there in August, I'll have to bring a coat because I'm always cold.
When the sun goes down, you need it. It's just one of those things.
Yeah. I don't mind that. I just needed to be prepared for it.
Yeah. Being prepared is half the battle. So last time we talked.
G.I. Joe's not Disney.
Jen, you stayed at Paradise Pier, right?
Yes.
Okay, I stayed
in a theme park view room.
Which is nice.
Yes, because I have a great travel agent.
There you go.
You do. I have to agree.
I used DVC points and stayed at the Grand California.
Oh, nice.
Which is a lot like, so you say Grand Californian, you think Grand Floridian. It's more like Fort Wilderness.
Wilderness Lodge.
It's more like Wilderness Lodge. That's sort of the same thing.
It's very much like the arts and crafts.
Big wide open lobby.
Lots of fireplaces.
Yes, exactly. And the Grand Californian has an entrance directly into California Adventure. So you come down the elevator, walk past the swimming pool, grab a breakfast roll in the little, not food court, but a little grab-and-go area, and go right into the park.
And actually, that's the entrance we used all the time, even from Paradise Pier. Gotcha. We went through the Grand Californian.
But so you came across the road, basically.
Yeah.
So when we talked about the Disney bubble, and I felt like I was in it for a couple of days because staying at the Grand Californian, we came down the elevator, went into Grand Californian or California Adventure, came out, went to the swimming pool, walked back out the front, which puts you in the middle of downtown Disney, made a right, and went into Disneyland. So I never witnessed any of the outside stuff, even though you're right, it's only a block away. There's a convenience store.
So where did you come? You did all of Southern California. You guys came from San Diego or from
That's
the airport?
Right. From San Diego.
Because I remember coming. So we fly into John Wayne usually. And if we go from John Wayne directly to Disneyland, it's the most bizarre thing for Disney World vets. Last time we came from San Diego as well. But when we went a few years ago, we landed, we got our rental car, we started driving down the highway, and in like 7 minutes, the Matterhorn was on the side of the highway. I'm like, what is happening? This is so weird.
With no billboard before you see
nothing,
it.
Nothing. And you can see the backs of everything. Like from various places on the highway or from hotels, you can see the backs of buildings, and it's completely different. But
absolutely.
Even from the Fun Wheel, you can see behind, kind of backstage.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very different, but.
It's very different.
I agree. So at the Grand Californian, did you guys do the Grand Quest?
We did not. We were there 4 days, and 4 days isn't enough, even though I thought it would be.
No,
it absolutely wasn't. I needed a whole week, but you have to understand, we did lots and lots of other things while we were out there. The best we did was a little bit of time at the swimming pool, most of the time in the parks.
That's cool. So the Grand Quest, for anyone listening, actually is available to any Disneyland Resort guest, so the Disneyland Hotel, Paradise Pier, or the Grand Californian. I think it's 4 p.m. every day. You go to the guest services desk there, which is different from the check-in desk. You get this little scavenger hunt, and it's not really a scavenger hunt. You really have to talk to cast members, and they give you secret codes, and you have to go throughout different areas of the hotel, and at the end you get an edible prize, which is very good. So it was a lot of fun. It probably only took maybe 20-30 minutes, and I think it's available every afternoon. So that was something kind of, just different and free. And if someone's just sitting around, it's right by where those little the little wooden chairs are for the kids to watch cartoons. So very cool. Yeah, it was a really cool little activity. So I think we happened to see it on our Paradise Pier activity sheet, but we just went over and checked it out. It was pretty cool.
Cool. So speaking of activity sheets, there was lots of speculation leading into the 60th anniversary. So Friday, July 17th, is the actual anniversary. And there was a lot of speculation leading into this as to what was going to happen, what was going on. All we had heard was there was a moment planned for 10 a.m. And we got a little sheet under our door when we got back Thursday night for what was happening on the 17th. And it was pretty cool, some of the things they had planned. And the hunt that you're talking about, they had a special one for the 60th, which was kind of cool.
That's cool.
They also had a ceremony in Disneyland that was also broadcast to various places around both Disneyland and California Adventure and all of the hotels.
That's cool.
So they had a very big screen in front of It's a Small World, in front of Frontierland, and in Carthay Circle over at DCA. They also had a pre-parade before the 4:30 parade, which was original 1955 cast members. Which
was
pretty
cool. Oh, how cool.
So they loaded up the double-decker bus and all those little vehicles that they have coming down Main Street in the morning, which I love Disneyland for, by the way. There just seems to be so much of that on Main Street.
It's busy,
morning.
Yeah, like in
it's
a good
busy.
Way.
There's fire trucks and cars and horses and double-decker buses and lots of things. And they had those all come out with the original cast members from 1955, which was really cool.
That is cool.
Why do you think it is they don't do as much stuff on Main Street and Walt Disney and Magic Kingdom?
My first reaction was going to be crowds, but it's super crowded there, too, on Main Street. So I don't know.
I mean, you do see some of the stuff there in Magic Kingdom in the morning. But you certainly don't see it all day, you know.
And I feel like it's coming, like, I see the horse more often. Like, when we first started going, it was in all the guidebooks and there were signs. And I never saw any of those things. And then now, I feel like I see them more. But no, Disneyland, I mean, it's like a little bustling Main Street. It's really kind of crazy. And it's not any less crowded. And certainly, not on the 17th.
By no means is it less crowded.
It's very busy. So I'm not sure what that reasoning is.
We went there one time, and we went after the morning show. You walk, you know, when you go through the tunnel, the little trolley was sitting there, and you just hop on. I think a lot of people don't realize you can just hop on.
And you know...
We hopped on and rode it to the hub, which is...
That's really cool. I've never ridden
it. It was so cool. It was so cool just riding down Main Street on it.
On one hand, I would think, you know, it doesn't have the mass appeal, and in Disneyland, you have plenty of people who still value and cherish that nostalgia, and it's not going to have the same mass appeal in Florida. At the same time, though, it takes, like, one cast member, and you only have to have it, you know, a few times throughout the day. It's not like they would be losing anything...
Well, like the horse, the horse-drawn little trolley, they use it anyway. So when after the morning show, you go in and you can hop on and you can ride to the hub. Yep. And then they make you get off because all the cast members that do the little trolley show get on at the hub and they do the trolley show all the way back.
Yep.
That's so cool.
That is cool.
Which if anybody listening, if you haven't seen the trolley show...
Definitely something to see, and something that they don't do in Disneyland. Right, there is no morning show there.
Now, on that note, and correct me, I have never really seen this at Disney World, but in Disneyland, it really seemed like there were a lot of those things, but the characters interacted with them a ton. It'd be like the Main Street Philharmonic, but it was smaller. So, like a little kind of mini orchestra was playing on Main Street in Disneyland, and Chip and Dale were like being goofballs to it. And then my girls played musical chairs a couple of years ago with Alice and the Mad Hatter during the refreshment corner, whatever it's by Jolly Holiday, but basically the Casey's Pianist, like they come out and play musical chairs with the kids. So most of these little things have characters with them, which is super cool.
So outside of the entertainment, you don't see that a lot at Disney, in Magic Kingdom at all. But recently I saw someone had posted in the Disney Nerds group that they've added Flynn Rider to the Magic Kingdom but not as a meet and greet. He roams. Hmm. He just roams.
Nice.
So similar to Gaston.
And similar to Gaston.
Gaston
was a meet and greet, but he would just walk away. And he would just go, he would grab a little girl by the hand and walk her over to see Belle. And that's what he would do.
But I think that was just I think that was Gaston being in a good mood. Like, it definitely wasn't like a free roaming character as far as I know.
Got it.
From what I understand, like, Flynn Rider is just a free roaming character. And I've also seen Peter Pan do that in the Magic Kingdom. There's a YouTube video.
That is cool.
Somebody playing it. You know, they walked up behind, they saw Peter Pan, like, walking around right there, and they went and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You're it," and ran off, and he chased them.
That is amazing because that was one of the very first things that stuck out with me the first time we went to Disneyland.
So the handlers hate it, by the way.
Is how, well, but in Disneyland they don't have them. Yeah. Now this last trip, I will say there were a few character interactions where they formed a line and there was like a, I believe they call them character hosts is the PC term. There was somebody there, but not in all of them. That was just a few. We still had Darth Maul stalk us in Tomorrowland while everyone was waiting hours to see him in Star Wars. We talked about that before. It's so cool. And so, like, I noticed that, and I can't say I miss it because I wasn't around for it at Walt Disney World, but you hear about that's how it was always at Disneyland, where you would never know who you'd happen to just see walking around.
Yeah, you just happen upon them, and they're free roaming. They're not, it's not something you can find on the time guide that so-and-so is going to be here to
for this number of days.
And they form a line
15 minutes before, and which is fine. I mean, there's a place for that too, but there's something to be said for that. I love that.
The spontaneity, absolutely. And, man, I tell you, there's almost nothing better in the parks than a really good character.
Right. Yeah.
Me and Sam and I think Ed, I guess it was me, Sam, and Ed. It was definitely me, Sam, and Kim. No, it was me, Sam, and Kim. You pointed her out to us. It was Mary Poppins.
Yes, in Epcot.
How fantastic. God almighty. It was like sitting there looking at Mary Poppins.
Well, the interaction was beautiful.
That's what I'm talking about. Just the way she interacted. And she just constantly in character, which, I mean, they all do a pretty good job. But if you don't really interact too much, being in character is pretty easy. She really went out of her way to interact.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm telling you, I mean, we didn't even have kids with us, and
it just watched,
me, Sam, and Kim just stood there and watched for probably for 10 minutes.
And it was little
just
things
just watching
like,
her interact with other kids.
Little things like, why do you look sad? You know, a spoonful of sugar will help that. That kind of
That's
thing.
So cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Wow. So cool. So cool.
But we're way off track. So let me pull us back. Disneyland
it's good.
On...
It's good.
It is.
You're pulling us back?
Yeah, believe it or not.
You're the one who usually drives train off the tracks.
So,
I'm turning this show off now.
July 17th. All right, here's what else they did. They had some 1955 themed photo spots throughout both Disneyland and California Adventure. So what these were was big backdrops that were sort of like, hey, this is what this used to look like, what you're standing in front of. So right in front of Tomorrowland, there was a big picture of Tomorrowland, the way it looked in 1955, along with one of the rockets that's still there, and that was pretty cool. There was one in Critter Country, back in Toontown, in Hollywoodland, and at Grizzly Peak Waterfall, so it was pretty cool. Over in DCA, the pictures were parking lots, which I thought was pretty cool, because that's what it was in 1955.
That's cool.
They also had some, you know, this whole dance thing that's always going on, the DJ dance parties. They had 1955 dance clubs. There were two of them. One in Tomorrowland and one over in Carthay Circle at DCA. So a little and lots of people, by the way, dressed themed to 1950s.
So there was like a
Dapper Days.
Yeah.
There was lots of that happening on that day. So on the 17th, there were lots of people in the poodle skirts and in those types of things looking like they might have looked. So in addition to the 1955 themed photo spots, there were also Diamond Celebration photo spots, which were more
I have to ask about that.
Yes.
Go ahead and tell about it, and then tell me what the one in by Big Thunder was, because my poor daughter, we waited every single day for that to show up because it was supposed to show up on our first day, and it never did. She was crushed, and I say that kind of jokingly. Because it's not really a big deal, but she wanted, it was like a little scavenger hunt for her. She wanted to find all of those, and that one was not open.
All of the Diamond Celebration. So these, again, were photo opportunities, but in these cases, it's Matterhorn, Big Thunder, Haunted Mansion, Grizzly River Run, California Screamin', and A Bug's Land. Essentially, it was a backdrop that looked like Matterhorn or Big Thunder, and then in front of you was the car. So you sort of sat down, and it looked like you were sitting inside of the Matterhorn as it was going around one of the turns, and you could, you know, put your hands up and kind of scream. That's what it was. And I have one of those pictures of Big Thunder. The most popular one was Haunted Mansion. It was essentially the graveyard scene. Think of the interactive queue at Magic Kingdom. Except that interactive queue, when you first go in and they have everybody, they're, you know, the busts on top of the tombstones, you put your head in that bust.
That's cool. Mm.
And there were people lined up like you wouldn't believe for that. That's the one I wanted. And, of course, that's the one that had the longest line.
We loved the Matterhorn one, I think because of the photographer we had there.
Could be it.
So, basically, it looked like you were scaling the side of the mountain, the way they set it up and the way they framed it. And he had us making the most, like, crazy poses, you know, like... one of us was falling off, the others were trying to catch them or ignoring them falling. I mean, we were probably there for 5 or 10 minutes just doing all these different little scenarios that he had us doing, climbing the side of the Matterhorn, which was super fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. They also, of course, had merchandise like you would not believe. I'm sure some of that was there when you were there, Jen. It's just 60th anniversary, you name it, they have it all over the parks. They also had, I think I mentioned it last week, the scavenger hunt, which was Find the Mickey, which was really a hidden Mickey challenge. And when you finished it, you got a medal that said, you know, I found all the Mickeys, and a lanyard that went with it. And the lanyard said Disneyland 60th on it, which was cool.
Very cool.
So how was the cupcake?
That's the next thing I got here. There were...
It looks so good.
Around the park, there were cupcake locations, free for the guests. Cupcakes and anniversary buttons with a big exclamation point next to it, or asterisk, while supplies last. So the button was a button that says, I was there on the date. You got the button at both DCA and Disneyland, so they gave it away at both of those. Along with a commemorative map that was only for that day that has a picture of Walt for Disneyland as he is giving the original opening day speech 60 years ago. And the map for DCA had a picture of Carthay Circle from 1937.
That's so cool.
And both of those open up, and if you flip them inside out, it's a map of Disneyland opening day, which was pretty cool to take a look at that.
That's really neat. I have the Epcot 30th map.
Very similar.
It was pretty cool as far as, like, commemorative things, but I would have loved to, yeah, have just seen, and I guess it hasn't changed nearly as much, but to see the, not just little highlights of rides that have closed, but to see, like, what the map would have looked like is very cool.
Yeah, and you look at it and you realize there's not many things on it for Disneyland.
Sure. Oh, my gosh. Well, Disney nerds know that there is pretty much nothing there by comparison.
Yeah, by comparison today. I mean, it was the teacups and the Dumbos as far as rides for kids. Nothing else was open yet. Well, that's another show. And the anniversary buttons are great. Now, the maps, the buttons, I have a few extras that I might be able to bring to our meet.
What?
Yeah, so I might be able to hook up some of my co-hosts along with a guest or two.
So yeah, I'm sure if they would be wearing a Disney Nerds Podcast t-shirt, that may increase their odds.
It could, and asterisk while supplies last, because they have very limited quantities. The cupcakes were good. You expect the cupcake to be, what is this? It reminded me of the trick-or-treat stations at Not So Scary.
Yeah.
Right, they had the big white globe with a cupcake on the side of it, and this is where they were basically handing everybody a cupcake.
That's cool. That's cool.
I'll tell you what I did like about it. If you got them right when they brought them out, they were frozen. So the ice cream was, or the icing was really cold and almost like ice cream, and it really felt good on a hot day.
Wow.
But yeah, it was cool to have a cupcake and an anniversary button and hang out with some really cool stuff. I will tell you that I cheated a little bit on the actual day because, as you mentioned before, Jen, every other day one of the parks opens an hour early. And on the 17th, it was DCA that opened early. It was not Disneyland.
Hmm.
But that's okay because we were able to ride Cars, Radiator Springs Racers a couple of times before we headed over to Disneyland. It was absolutely packed as far as people were concerned, but I think a lot of them were locals that just wanted to come get that map and experience being there because the lines outside of Space Mountain, Indy Jones, and the Matterhorn were all reasonable. Those three were ridiculous the whole time as far as lines went. But Pirates was 20 minutes. Small World was 15 minutes. So it wasn't that long to ride some of these things. So while everybody was sort of enjoying the 60th, my family and I were riding attractions. We were getting as much in as we could.
Yeah.
And it worked out good.
I think that makes sense, too, because you're not there. You're not a local, so...
I'm not a local. I was there with my family. It just happened to be mapped like that. I will say the Paint the Night parade, absolutely incredible. It belongs in that. If they bring something like this to Disney World, this belongs mentioned right in that list with Main Street, Spectro, and Paint the Night. It belongs there. Disneyland Forever Fireworks, spectacular. You're talking about combining, go Walt Disney World, you have the Castle Stage Show, and then you have the fireworks. Take those two concepts and combine them together. But at Disneyland, because their castle isn't that big, they need other places to project these images. So they use all of the streets along Main Street. The top floors light up. They use It's a Small World attraction, which is this huge outdoor facade. They use the mountain for the Matterhorn to project onto. It makes the entire place completely interactive with no bad spot.
That's
it's
cool.
It's just really cool. And I'll also say it is absolutely organized chaos when the whole thing is going on. Jen, I don't know if you agree with that or not, but if you try to find a spot for the parade, which runs twice, once before and after fireworks, if you try to watch the parade and then stick around for fireworks, it is absolutely a madhouse of people. Organized chaos is the best I could say. One other note that I'll say, on that day, we watched the first Paint the Night and then fireworks, and then we went back over to California Adventure because there were three World of Colors that night.
Wow.
Yes, three of them, and one of them started 5 minutes after the park closed. Mm. So something that people may not know, back on Paradise Pier, they pretty much close all of the attractions before World of Color. So the roller coaster closes, Mickey's Fun Wheel closes, so do a couple of the spinner rides. But Toy Story Mania remains open. So you can go into Toy Story Mania and ride that. So waiting for that third World of Color, which I believe started at 11:15. I have it here for Friday. It was 9 o'clock, 10:15, and 11:15. The park closed at 11. So we rode Toy Story Mania three times with a five-minute wait before 11 o'clock. There was nobody back there. My arm was so sore. It was unbelievable. Right? Me and Nick trying to get the high score against each other.
That's
right?
Crazy.
At 11,
that line's usually long.
It's usually really long.
All right, so who holds the high score?
It goes back and forth.
No, who holds the record right now? No, don't be, you don't know.
From this past trip? Nick beat me this past trip, but I hold the record Walt Disney World, and we have a complete show someday about the Easter eggs in there and what you can find and how you score more. Cool. Although that'll be a show that Jimmy's not allowed to listen to.
By the way, I've only beat Kim once. Out of all the times we've ridden that, but it just so happens to be the last time, so I am the current.
There you go.
That's the only reason I'm bringing it up. Right, yes, that's the only reason I'm bringing it up. I'd be here once, and it just happened to be the last time.
So we basically had a private World of Color, and it was incredible. That third one, there was nobody really there for it. And again, for us, this was now 11:30, you know, it's 11:45, back into the hotel, up the steps, and then back down again at 6:30 the next morning. And that's what it meant by being in the bubble. Really, for those 4 days, I was up and down, until the last day we got stuck after fireworks back by It's a Small World in Disneyland and decided to take the monorail back to downtown Disney to walk to the Grand Californian because it's about the same distance. But we didn't have to fight getting through the park. And as soon as you go on that monorail and come around the corner and you see, you know, the fire trucks on Harbor Boulevard there, then that kind of pops the bubble right away.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, because the monorail runs alongside that street, which is super cool. If you're staying off property, you're walking to go in and you're like, oh, it's so cool. The monorail's running right by us.
There it goes.
But if you want to be in the bubble, you're
not. Yeah, no, you're not. Stay on the other side of the monorail. Don't look out the left side. Only look out the right. We've gone way long, and I want to at least play the audio from the ceremony, which happened at 10 o'clock, and it started with, you know, it was interesting because both parks sort of stopped, and everybody was watching these screens. It was only 18 minutes long. They played Walt's original ceremony, the original induction or dedication, which was awesome. And everybody knows that. To all come to this happy place. Then it was a little introduction, and then Richard Sherman played Walt's favorite song.
I feel like we need to give a little warning that I'm pretty sure I've cried every single time I've listened to this audio. So
then we might as well play that again.
Consider yourself warned if you're driving or in front of people you don't want to be embarrassed in front of. Or
And Jen, one other thing I'll mention. When they do the fireworks at Disneyland and Julie Andrews introduces it, and she basically says, imagine where you're standing. A little over 60 years ago was in an orange grove. And you just go, wow. It kind of hits you because this is it. This is where it all started, 60 years ago. And that kind of brings it all around.
Follow us on Twitter, at the Disney Nerds. Periscope, at the Disney Nerds. Facebook, we have the Disney Nerds Facebook page, Disney Nerds Podcast Facebook page, and also the Disney Nerds group. And on Instagram, at the Disney Nerds Podcast. It's been fun.
It has been. Hey, you guys have questions?
Been fun listening to you guys, yeah.
Questions for the show, questions at thedisneynerds.com. You can reach all of us, Sam, Jen, Jimmy, and of course Ed, who couldn't be with us tonight, but is listening going, man, these guys are talking way too long. So we'll cut right to the audio from the 60th anniversary of Disneyland. Congaloosh.
Yeah.
Clarine.
Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please welcome the president of the Disneyland Resort, Michael Colglazier.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining us today as we celebrate Disneyland's 60th birthday. The inspired speech you just heard was delivered by Walt Disney himself on July 17th, 1955. Walt created Disneyland as a place where parents and children could spend time together. He wanted family and friends to come to this happy place to make memories that would last a lifetime. And as we celebrate the legacy of Walt Disney and the history of the Disneyland Resort, it is fitting to reflect on the amazing amount of thought, energy, creativity, and care that Walt and his team put into creating the happiest place on earth. Now, some of the members of the team that helped Walt create and open Disneyland back in 1955 are here today. And with all of you, I'd like to thank and recognize them for all that they've done. So, first, I'd like to welcome members of the Disney family. You are an enormous part of the legacy of the Disneyland Resort, and your presence here today makes this day very special for us. Thank you for being here. Second, please join me in recognizing several of the cast members and Imagineers who created and opened Disneyland in 1955. Walt said that it took people to make his dream a reality, and without each of you, we would not be standing here today. Thank you for all you've done for us. Disney legends gather here this morning. Your roles at Disney span across the stage, the screen, and of course our parks. And your contributions to our company and to Disney fans around the world and right here today are legendary. I'm thrilled to have you join us here today. Would you please stand? Truly be the happiest place on earth, it would need certain qualities. He knew that Disneyland had to immerse guests in their favorite stories, and he knew that Disneyland had to offer unique experiences that couldn't be found anywhere else in the world. He knew Disneyland had to be a living thing. It had to grow and change and evolve over time. Ultimately, Walt knew that Disneyland had to have a heart, a soul, and a purpose. Disneyland's purpose is to create happiness, but its heart and its soul come from people, our guests, our cast members, and the people in the community who live around us. And over the years, in addition to creating happiness that we've done in our parks, we have continued Walt's legacy of giving back to our community. For our Diamond Celebration, we've added a brilliant new nighttime parade. We've added an entirely new world of color, and we've added our greatest fireworks show yet, which is truly awesome. But the Diamond Celebration wouldn't be complete without also giving a gift back to our community, which is why, in addition to the many community programs that we already support in Anaheim and Orange County, we are adding one more magical donation. In honor of our Diamond Celebration, I am proud to announce the Million Dollar Dazzle. Every month throughout our celebration, we're going to surprise local organizations with grants adding up to a total of $1 million. These grants will help local agencies enrich the lives of children and families and inspire them to build a brighter future. This morning, we had the pleasure of awarding our first donation to the Girl Scouts of Orange County, who are right here. And we are looking forward to awarding other deserving organizations throughout our celebration. Thank you, Allie and Jessica, for your help. Giving back to the community is one part of Walt's legacy that has continued throughout the years. And of course, Walt's presence continues here in many ways. One of the most powerful pieces of his legacy was his enduring love of music. Walt knew that music was the key to establishing true emotional connections with our guests. And we've all experienced this. If you've ever hung some Pirate's Life for Me, if you've ever hitched a ride with our grim grinning ghost, or if you've remembered that it is indeed a small world after all, then you have felt the power of song. Today, in honor of our 60th birthday, and as a very special thank you to Walt, we have two very special guests helping us celebrate with song. Handpicked by Walt Disney himself, the first has created unforgettable songs for Disney movies, shows, and theme parks for more than half a century. While the second is a world-renowned singer and a star who has brought one of our most beloved Disney characters to life on Broadway. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Disney legend and songwriter, Richard Sherman. And Broadway's Mary Poppins, Ashley Brown.
Begin with Richard. dear Chairman. My goodness, I think I should begin with thanking you and Robert for all of the amazing music that you created for all of us. As a little girl, it was your music and Disney that came into my heart and made me want to pursue music and to pursue a life on Broadway. And I know I wouldn't be standing here in this moment if it wasn't for what you created. So please a round of applause for Richard Sherman.
There are so many people to thank when you're standing up here in this position, but the one person above all whom I'd love to thank so much is Walt Disney himself. He was Walt Disney was a man who gave my brother Bob and myself a career, and I'll tell you how this all happened. We were writing a few songs for his projects. He liked everything we were doing. And one day he handed us a book and he said, read this and tell me what you think. And it was a book by a lady by the name of Pamela Travers. You might have heard the book, Mary Poppins. Now, we read Mary Poppins and he said, there's such a treasure trove of ideas in here, but there's one that really struck us. It was this old lady who sold breadcrumbs. And he said, this could be symbolic of what this story could be, because it doesn't take very much to give love and kindness. It doesn't take but tuppence, that's two pennies in English language. To make a long story short, we wrote a song called Tuppence a Bag. And when we played it for Walt for the first time, he listened to it very intently and he said, play that bird lady thing again. So I played it a second time and he said, you know, that's what it's all about. How you fellas like to work here? And we said, we'd love to work for you. And that was the day he signed us as his staff songwriters. And so here I am today thanking Walt Disney. And I can't think of a better way to thank Walt Disney than to have the wonderful Ashley Brown singing his favorite song. And this is a song that I sing for him on Fridays. Sometimes he'd call us into his office and say, play it. And I knew what he wanted, and I'd play the song for him. And here you're gonna hear it. And it's especially for Walt.
Still the sky.
Richard and Ashley, I truly cannot imagine a better way to say thank you to Walt Disney than with the song that the two of you just shared. Thank you. Now, as many of you know, we have a tradition here at Disneyland of singing Happy Birthday on July 17th. Richard and Ashley, would you mind leading us today?
Of course, we would love to. But please, everyone, help us out in singing Disneyland Happy Birthday!
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, Ashley, for making this a very special 60th birthday. And to all of our guests, thank you for being with us. As Walt said, Disneyland is your land. Please enjoy the rest of your visit on today's 60th anniversary of the Disney.